playing a little bit of music out of World War II, Craig, this morning. Because joining us in studio, we have Liz Schultz, Executive Director from the Oberlin Heritage Center. It's always fun to have her in to talk about things that are taking place there as well. By the way, I want to compliment you on your website. I like this website you've got here. Is this sort of relatively newer, or has this been
maybe in the last 2 years or so? We had it redesigned so that people can look at it on their phone and it still makes sense. So we had to do some updates.
That's a key thing too, because people are searching you basically on the phones. But a lot of different things happening here, and one of the things that you have here has to do with the World War II. Oberlin reacts to World War II. It's something happening on March 14th. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, one of our board members, Steve Johnson, he's a retired music instructor, but he's, I guess, an amateur historian of World War II. He's been down to the National Museum in New Orleans, and he did a trip where he followed the Band of Brothers story in Europe, so very interested in this topic. And the museum, the Oberlin Heritage Center, we're trying to pull a little bit more from 1900s history and interpret that, and World War II is certainly one of those events that impacted the entire globe, and we hadn't really looked into it too much. I mean, it was in recent enough memory that until, 20, 30 years ago, some people could tell you the stories themselves, but we're getting beyond that point where you have generations that have no connection to that. So we wanted to collect stories. We actually had three wonderful winter term students work with us through January. And the first task we gave them was like, okay, let's just compile a list of all of the soldiers who came from Oberlin. And we were expecting maybe 500, 600 names or so, and they quickly surpassed 800, and the end of the list is over 1,000. So even that blew us away of how many people were involved throughout the duration of the war. And that was just the soldiers. They were also collecting people who volunteered for various services or were doing things on the home front too. So, well, we can't do a program about 1,000 people or so. But this first one, it's Oberlin Reacts to the War. So Steve and the students tried to pull all sorts of different articles from the local paper about things like war bond drives and scrap drives and victory gardens and what some of the attitudes were around town to the war and how the college shifted during the war. So just trying to break that up and see what people thought of the war. And it was pretty interesting, just reading the Oberlin News Tribune, the paper didn't really report on the war itself. Like if you wanted to know what happened on D-Day, you had to go to the Cleveland papers or some of the bigger ones. The local paper was more focused on some of the soldiers and local activities that were going on. So we're already kind of finding out how they thought about the war in a way, just through that little bit of information.
And when you have that many people drawn out of the community, it had to have a dramatic impact.
It did. It's hard to pull the stories out from the papers, but from talking with people and doing the oral histories, we also know that for many women, this was their first job, that they were called into the factories. And there's one woman in town that she was able to buy a house at like 17 because she had a good factory-paying job that was, I don't want to say thanks to the war, but because of the war need.
Was there any industry or things that happened in Oberlin with facilities that were then converted to things helping out the war cause?
Not necessarily manufacturing in Oberlin, but there was a V-12 training program. So they had some soldiers who were based at Oberlin College for a while. And it's interesting that, these were very fit young men coming. So the football team did really well for a few years.
Side effects of the war, right? Again, that's the Oberlin Reacts to World War II. It's taking place at Kendall at Oberlin's Heiser Auditorium. That comes up on March 14th at 7:15. Now, you're going to send us around the world, too. What is this spring break camp that's coming up?
So it's Oberlin when the schools have a week off of school. So we try to have a camp so kids can have a bit of a fun learning experience throughout that time. So we're doing 3 days, and our museum education and tour coordinator, Amanda, she's going to take the kids on they're not really going to these places, but a journey to Australia, West Africa, India, and learning about Arctic peoples as well. So we just think that it's important for kids to know different cultures of the world, and culture is based in history, so learning about how traditions come about, so maybe food, music, dance, folk stories, so just a way to keep kids learning, but also explore the world at the same time.
And where to find them on the map, too, sometimes.
And where to find them, yes.
And you said Arctic people?
Mm-hmm.
We don't often hear that phrase. Well, tell us more about Arctic people?
I guess it's it describes people who share a culture of like having to deal with the Arctic environment, but Eskimo, Inuit, Tlingit, you know, they're all different cultures, but they share some of those same practices because of their environment. So I guess it's a broad term to get at some of those shared practices, but also explore the individual nations or Native American groups within that.
This is Women's History Month, and so you've got something planned for that as well. Tell us a little bit about some of that program.
We do. Well, online, you can see our Facebook page. We've been doing a lot of posts about Oberlin women who kind of pushed against certain barriers, but also towards the end of the month, when it will hopefully be as warm as possible, we have a women's history walk. It's called One Step More. So that's on March 25th, Saturday at 10:30. So this explores how Oberlin became the first coeducational college in the country. Some of those early women who set the bar for other women, the first women to apply to the collegiate program. Some women like Lucy Stone, who, although they appreciated the educational opportunity, still felt Oberlin was not giving her as much opportunity as she could have. She even had to strike to be paid equally for her teaching work. And also some women who maybe broke the rules. Cassie Chadwick, who swindled us out of a lot of money at the turn of the century, and another female principal of the ladies department who got into trouble for maybe being too familiar with one of her male students. So there are some stories across the spectrum, but Oberlin certainly was a first in women's rights, and it being Women's History Month, we wanted to highlight that. So that is a tour we have available year-round for groups, but we certainly wanted to have a special offering in March.
Bruce, I heard the words swindle in there. Tell us a little more about Cassie.
Cassie. So she had been doing this all over the Cleveland area. She kind of made friends with certain people and swindled them. So in Oberlin, she came to the local bank and very strongly implied that she was related to Andrew Carnegie somehow, and maybe got a little familiar with the bank president. And before you knew it, we were out several hundred thousands of dollars. She cleared out a lot of student and faculty and resident, you know, their savings accounts and everything, because she wasn't related to Carnegie. She just took their money and ran, which she had done to other places, but she was always able to pay it back. Like, she would have used the Oberlin money to pay back the previous bank. But Oberlin is where it caught up with her, so she was arrested shortly after that.
See, this is all coming back to me, Craig, because I'm looking at this. We talked to you, or we had someone talk about the Bonnets to Boardwomen's Women's Stories from Historic College Town. I mean, it sort of had some of those stories in there as well, if I remember from the past. Craig, see, we get here long enough, first we learn about the high, you know, class of what's happening in the communities, and then we kind of low. And we learned about the bootleggers, the rum runners on Avon Lake from somebody there. So there's always interesting. And sometimes that's sometimes more of the fun history, or at least it makes people understand history in the present. There's a lot of connections other than just the buildings and the people's names that you see kind of left behind.
Right. It's fun to find those stories that maybe get buried over time, because I think those are the stories that reveal the diversity of people back then. And not everyone, even in Oberlin, was, you know, very godly and going to church all the time. You had a whole spectrum of people, and their stories are just as important.
Talking this morning with Liz Schultz from the Oberlin Heritage Center. Craig, what is this thing you wrote down for April Fool's Day? What do you have coming up on that? Is that a coincidence?
Twister or a myth buster? What's that, Liz?
So our education and tour coordinator, Amanda Manahan, she saw April Fool's on the calendar, and you might be hearing a lot about fake news as well right now. So she is designing a tour called Historically Inaccurate. So we have some people contact us occasionally about legends they've heard about Oberlin, or things we've even maybe interpreted wrong 20 years ago, and now we realize, like, oh, that's not really what we think it is, and this is what it is. So the whole tour will go through our three buildings, and it'll be based on our usual tour, but she's going to pause and ask people, so these are like the two versions, which do you think is the correct one? Or maybe like the story of Oberlin was named after John Frederick Oberlin, a minister in Europe. Do you think he visited Oberlin or lived in Oberlin or not? So just getting people to think about some of those base facts of Oberlin, but also there are some good myths and legends that are still perpetuated today. So trying to tackle those in a fun way.
Those are the ones that end up on a T-shirt at some point, right? Isn't that where you kind of wonder whether these things are true or not? But again, it adds the color to the history. And you know, that's what you end up doing. We talked last time with you. You tried, as you mentioned, moving the Heritage Center and the history of Oberlin sort of forward. You talk about World War II, which many of people think, well, that's sort of, we know about that, or it's just one generation removed. But some people, it's not. It's further away. So it's a way to bring more history. So there's a lot more things you can keep adding to what's going on over there.
Right. And people, when they're, you know, they might be used to being lectured at in a tour, but we try to keep our tours very conversational. So this tour will be even more so, where they have to kind of analyze the facts and the history. And I think that helps people remember better, too, when they're taking part in the discovery and learning process.
And I think, too, for someone who might be 20, 21 years old, World War II is like ancient history to them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. World War II, Korean War, Vietnam, right. These are things of the past. So just trying to both teach them about the basics of the war, but also the intricacies. And also just a reminder that it might seem long ago, like people imagining it in black and white, but you read the letters, you read the newspaper articles, and how they behaved and how they reacted is not so different from us today. I mean, they had senses of humor and they were very smart and sometimes very mean to each other. So it's just like today.
Is your weather getting better for walking tours? Is that going to be coming soon?
It really depends on the day. Okay. Sometimes, like today, it would be perfect, and yesterday would have been really bad.
I guess so. That's what you have to just to determine what happens. So always call ahead or find out what's happening at the Oberlin Heritage Center, I guess, this morning. Liz Schultz, we appreciate you coming, and thanks for sharing a bit of your day today with us.